Pat Quinn is only in his first full term as governor, but he's already granted nearly 1,000 requests for clemency. The governor is clearing away a backlog of requests left over from the Rod Blagojevich administration.
I'm very sympathetic to Solomon in the Old Testament. He had to make a lot of decisions, and you hope you make the right ones. You try and apply your conscience to every single case.
Every governor receives clemency requests, but not all of us know what clemency involves. I'm Jim Meadows, and today on Focus, we'll explore clemency, pardons, and commutations with Steve Beckett, attorney and lecturer at the University of Illinois College of Law. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and the subject today is the act of clemency, which the dictionary describes as an act of mercy. Pat Quinn has been granting a lot of clemency in his first full term as governor. He's already granted nearly 1,000 requests for clemency from people who have been convicted of crimes. Actually, the governor is clearing away a backlog of requests left over from the Rod Blagojevich administration. The governor was in Champaign-Urbana yesterday, and when he was asked about it, he admitted the process of clearing through that backlog of clemency requests has not been easy.
Well, you need the wisdom of Solomon. I grant some clemencies, I deny others. You know, you have to take each case individually, look at all the facts, and make a decision. I inherited a huge backlog of cases for, 6 years. And we have made our way through that. We meet on a regular basis to go through the petitions for clemency. There are some people, they made a mistake in their life. Maybe it was long ago. They have done great things since then with their life. They made amends. They paid their penalty and consequence, and they've made a difference. And it's very important for them to have that mistake in the past expunged. And if there are good reasons, I look at that and make a decision.
That's Governor Quinn speaking about the clemency process yesterday. We are taking a closer look at the clemency process today on Focus with a guest who was last on the show in September helping to explain some of the intricacies of the Illinois Supreme Court. Steve Beckett is an attorney and founding partner at Beckett and Weber in Urbana, and a lecturer and director of trial advocacy at the University of Illinois College of Law. Steve, welcome back to Focus.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
Article 5, Section 12 of the Illinois Constitution gives the governor the power to grant clemency, or specifically reprieves, commutations, and pardons after conviction for all offenses on such terms as he thinks proper, subject to regulation by law. So, Steve, does the power given to the governor cover everything from reducing or eliminating, a prison sentence to wiping a conviction off the public record like it never happened?
Well, I don't think the governor has the power to wipe a conviction off the record as if it didn't happen. There is an expungement process that the legislature has set up. But I don't think I didn't like the use of the word expungement, expunge that the governor used in his comments there, because I don't think his pardoning anyone or his commutation of sentence means that the person was never convicted. It may sound too technical, but I think the record of that conviction is still there.
So what would be noted is that there was a conviction, but then there was also a pardon.
Correct.
For that conviction.
Right. Pardon would be considered an act of grace, and we've indicated that clemency is the broader term and that pardon means relief from disability, so that the conviction, the disability that the conviction brings as a matter of law is removed. Commutation is a form of clemency where someone's sentence could be adjusted. So I think we sometimes just roll them all together and we act as if everything is gone because the governor granted relief, and that's not true.
And when a bunch of clemency decisions come out, do they usually include pardons or
just
reductions of sentence alone?
Yes. No, I think there's a veritable potpourri of relief that can be granted from pardon, which of course would remove the disability and end the sentence, to commutation of sentence.
I'm just wondering I guess this is a big picture question on why we have this process and why have the Illinois and other constitutions been written to give the executive branch this power to essentially undo the work of the judicial branch. So work that was done by a judge or a jury in a trial can essentially just be wiped away by the decision of a governor.
I think we inherit this from the Anglo system, the European continent system, where the monarchs had the power to grant reprieves or set aside death sentences, in essence had the pardon power, so that when we set up our executive in our constitution, we permitted the president to have that power. I think because it was assumed that executives should have that power, virtually every state has some system or another to grant pardons. Some states have commissions, some states just allow the governor to do it. We have a review board that assists the governor, that is advisory to the governor. The governor ultimately makes the decisions.
So it's done differently in different states. Some states, as we were discussing, actually have boards of pardon which make the decision by themselves. State officers sit on those boards, say the governor and a couple of others, and they make the final decision together. But all states in some form or another seem to have.
True.
It's just such a strong tradition in.
True. And the process is, fairly simple. You could do an internet search for Illinois pardon and clemency, and it'll pop up. The Prisoner Review Board, the Pardon Review Board will pop up. There's an online application. You can print the application. You can fill it out. There are supporting materials that you can give to it. And then ultimately, you would have a hearing in front of that board.
Well, what questions do you have about clemency and pardons? Have you or someone you know ever formally requested clemency? And was it granted? You can tell us about it. Give us a call toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WYLL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter. That's at Focus580. Now, the Governor Quinn has been working, he's been sending out a lot of these clemency requests, which he has either rejected or accepted. Why did the previous governor, Rod Blagojevich, leave so many unattended to? It's not like he turned them all down. He just didn't look at them.
He just didn't do it. It's incredible. I suppose different executives have different priorities. President Clinton used the pardon power a lot. President Bush used it almost not at all.
And did he leave? Did he leave clemency requests unattended to, or did he just say no?
He left them unattended to. Mm-hmm. So when President Obama came in, there were I had some myself that I had filed on behalf of clients to President Bush, contemplating that he might act on them before he left office, but he didn't. And then President Obama acted on my clients' clemency requests a year or so ago.
Okay.
Who knows why? Who knows why Governor Blagojevich did what he did? I mean, sort of the cynic in us leads us to believe, wow, he was always looking for angles to raise campaign finance money, and here was an angle he could have used, and he didn't use it.
Well, there are usually broad categories of reasons as to why clemency is granted, different types of cases.
Sure. Every case, I suppose, is dependent upon its own facts, but I think we can identify some categories. So we could have cases where there seems to be something within the case procedurally or factually that gives us pause to wonder why the person was convicted. A few years ago, there was a woman who had been convicted of murdering her husband, and she had a history of being battered. The court system had not been able to be the vehicle for her to get relief from that, and ultimately she was pardoned by the governor.
So that's like a flaw in the process.
Correct. So that we're looking at what happened in the case, and for whatever reason, we may have some doubt about it, and the court system was not able to address it for one reason or another. And then the next broad category, I would say, would be someone who had a conviction when they were young. They've gone on, they've led an exemplary life, they've really contributed to society, and relief from the disability of having the conviction removes the stigma and also sort of honors the commitment that they made to live a superlative life as time went on. So there's another category. And then I suppose there's a category that would be just pure mercy, perhaps someone who is dying, this demonstrates that we have the power of forgiveness.
And I'm looking at the Chicago Tribune reporting on the clemency requests that were processed last Friday, and they give a few examples. One of them is Enoch Benson. He's a former trustee at Southern Illinois University, and the story with him is that in 1995, he was met by police at his house with an arrest warrant involving the sale of his house as part of a divorce settlement. That's not involved in the clemency case. In the process of the whole thing, police searched Benson's car, and they found a gun in a bag. Benson told officers the gun had been in the bag for many years and was only used at the firing range. But he came out of this with an unlawful use of weapons conviction, and that's what the pardon was granted for. Benson, who filed his petition in 2009, had no prior offenses. And so
right.
Which category?
So I think that fits into the circumstances of the case category. You know, there are some prosecutors who would not have charged that case. It came to the law enforcement's attention during a divorce, which is truly an emotional time. There's a logical explanation for why the gun was where it was. The policy behind or purpose for the unlawful use of weapons law perhaps wasn't being met. But, you know, some prosecutors will say, no, it was a violation of the law, I'm going to prosecute it. Other prosecutors in the exercises of discretion might not. So now we have the governor years later looking back on it saying, you know, really, no harm, no foul.
What does not having that sort of conviction on your record, unlawful use of weapons, what can that mean to your professional life? Having it or not.
Well, some licenses are granted or denied based on character, and felony convictions can address that, or any conviction can address that. Sometimes it's just the stigma of having had a conviction at some time in your life. Can't have a hunting license, for example, or a gun permit. We're going to have concealed carry. I'm sure having a felony conviction is going to prevent people from having concealed carry permits. So relief from that disability would allow someone to do that.
There's another case here. It also has a connection with Southern Illinois University because let me catch his name here. It's Brandon Jones. He played football for SIU and then later played football for the NFL with the Minnesota Vikings. And he is not part of the Blagojevich backlog. He actually filed for his pardon in January of last year because he wants relief from a conviction because he wants to pursue his dreams of becoming a surgeon. He has graduated from the SIU School of Medicine. He graduated last May, but he has a battery conviction on his record, and this is from an incident about 10 years ago in which a friend of Jones was stopped while attempting to bring alcohol into a Northwestern football game. According to state officials, resisting an attempt to be escorted out of the stadium, Jones struck the usher while pulling his arm away. And in this case, he was seeking a pardon from that, which I guess would have affected his ability to practice medicine.
Right. So we look at what he's done since the time of his conviction. We note that he had no other record. And we say this actually will help the people of our state by letting him become a doctor, because this has no relationship whatsoever with his character now and his ability to be a surgeon.
You know, both of these people, you know, you have the university trustee, you have the football player. They just sound sort of connected. I don't mean to each other, but
I understand what you mean.
But connected, that they could have the influence to get a pardon from the governor.
Okay. What about an ordinary citizen?
Well, and I'm looking at one case which might be an ordinary citizen. Litra Sephor age 50, who was pardoned for theft, disorderly conduct, possession of drugs with the intent to deliver, and attempted possession of drugs in cases ranging over about 15 years from the mid-80s to the late 1990s. She's a mother of four in Cook County, and she argued that she had undergone inpatient treatment in 1998 and had been sober with no convictions for 15 years. And those were the grounds by which Governor Quinn granted a pardon for her.
So that would be, maybe that would fit our mercy category or a recognition of forgiveness to encourage people to get into self-help or other programs to end addictions and become productive citizens.
And that brings us to the question is, how difficult is it to seek clemency?
Well, it's the process is pretty simple, actually. It's that application process that we talked about a few moments ago where you ask the question, you know, may I please receive some relief, and you identify yourself, you identify the case or cases that you want the relief from, you describe in an essay form why it's important to you to have the pardon, you attach supporting documents, perhaps you have letters of support from folks within your community, maybe your legislators from your area as well. That certainly doesn't hurt, I guess, because it reflects that the community supports this. If there is community support, it might help. You file that with the board. The board has regular hearing dates. Your case gets assigned to a hearing date. You come and you have the opportunity to make a presentation where, of course, they'll ask you questions. It sort of reminds you of the parole board in Shawshank Redemption, where the inmates are brought in one at a time. What have you learned, you know, et cetera, about your crime, that sort of thing, except this is a review board for pardon or clemency applications. And then they take the case under advisement, and you wait until you get a decision.
Well, we're talking about clemency and pardons on Focus today, how the whole process works. Our guest is Steve Beckett. He's an attorney in Urbana and a lecturer at the University of Illinois College of Law. Ever try to get clemency from the governor or know someone who has? Or do you think you or someone you know might want to try this process? Well, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 1-800-222-WILL. And besides phone or email, you can send your questions to us on Twitter or Facebook at Focus580. You've handled clemency requests, so that makes it sound like it's probably a good idea to have an attorney handy.
I don't think that it's necessary, but I suppose an attorney with background and training will exercise a thought process to advocate your petition in the light most possible for favorable treatment. Mine have been federal. I had a pardon application to President Clinton for a woman who had eagle feathers and had made dream catchers, and one had been given to Hillary Clinton. You may remember the case. And so there was, I think, a great hue and cry about the decision to prosecute her in the first place. She's actually a really great person, great community person. And so as Clinton was leaving office, she was granted a pardon. And then I had two Decatur business people who were in the late 80s, I'd say, convicted of copyright or counterfeit goods, I guess I would say, charges in federal court, both felonies. And they were granted pardons by President Obama.
Now, and that was a case where it was actually a few years from the time of the filing.
Correct. I think actually applied for the pardons in 2008 in President Bush's last year. And I don't believe the pardons were granted until last year, until like 11 or 12. So it was a long, long time. I remember when I contacted my clients and told them that I'd heard from the pardon attorney in Washington, D.C. that they had been granted, that they were shocked. They pretty much had forgotten about it, didn't think it was going to happen.
So the request was made in President Bush's second term and granted in President Obama's second term. So that is
It's very unusual.
Now the process, there is a form. I'm looking at it now. If you go to the State Prisoner Review Board site, you'll find a way, place to click on the 5-page executive clemency relief form for seeking clemency in the state of Illinois. Is it just send in the form, or are they?
Well, send in the form, and I think there are attachments. There would be, if you had the docket sheets from your case, I think that's what a lawyer would advise you. Give them as much information to make it easy for them to digest what your case is about. If there are case materials, if there are police reports that, because you know you're trying to fit yourself into the category where you know this really wasn't a serious crime or the court system didn't handle my case properly, you know, kind of thing, then you might have that kind of information. On the other hand, if it's in the category, look what I've done since then it might be community support letters, newspaper articles, whatever that demonstrate, you know, who you are now and what you've done today that should put you into that category. So, you know, give them information to advocate your position. So in an easily readable form, don't make volumes and volumes and volumes of it. Make it concise, but give the process and the people, the review board people, information that they can understand what you're asking for and why.
So this is a case reminding us that it doesn't go straight to the governor. It goes to the review board.
It does not go to straight
what
to the governor.
What happens then?
Well, then, as I said, the review board the staff will review it. It'll be calendared. If there are any defects in the process, they'll send it back and make you resend it. Eventually, you'll get on a docket, a review board docket, where you'll go to either Springfield or Chicago. I imagine it's Chicago. I think a lady that I've been working with recently had a meeting in Chicago, and the board actually is there, and you present yourself, and they say, what do you have to say to yourself? You summarize it, and then they ask you questions about your application, and then they recess your case, and they move on to the next one, and ultimately you'll hear from them.
And the hearing, when that happens, what is it like?
Well, the hearing is in a conference room sort of setting, as opposed to a court. It's not a court at all. It's an administrative matter, and it's you. And if you had your attorney certainly could be sitting there too, with this group of people that has a chair, and they'll call the case, and the chair would say, we're here to address the pardon application of John Q. Citizen. Mr. Citizen, what is it you have to say? You may make opening remarks. Then each of the commissioners or members of the board would have the opportunity to ask questions. And staff, of course, has done research. If you've fouled the nest and you actually have said something that isn't true, or if you've left out, omitted something that's important, I'm sure that's been investigated. You could be hit in the face with that. You know, at the hearing, it could be pretty embarrassing if you're not well prepared.
What if your clients, what's been their reaction to the process? It's not something that you do every day, so it must
no. But I think it's one of those things that you have this lingering feeling that either my conviction was wrong, it was just wrong, it was unfair, it was unjust that I had this conviction, or what a stupid mistake I made. That conviction really doesn't reflect on who I am as a person. I'm a contributor to my community. I really am a good person. I'd really like the stigma gone. Or, like I've said, I want relief from the disability that the felony imposes upon me. And it's important enough to me that I want to subject myself to the process. It's one of those processes that you can't be told yes if you don't ask the question. It'll always be there. And if you ask the question, what's going to happen? The worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to be told no.
What's the process like, since you have handled some cases in the presidential, on the federal level? Is the process any different there?
Yeah, it is. My clients didn't have to go to Washington, D.C. in any of the instances. It was all done on paper. They were interviewed by telephone, by staff from the pardon attorney's office in D.C. And then all of a sudden, you know, they found out what the decision was. In the first instance, it was actually the day before President Bush was inaugurated, President Clinton announced a bevy of of pardons. And then in this other instance, surprisingly to many, President Obama had not acted with any frequency whatsoever on the pardon applications of his predecessor or those that had been made while he was in office, and pretty much came out of the blue. I think on a Friday I got a call that said, next Tuesday or next Monday or next Tuesday, this is going to be public announced. You might advise your clients. So I did.
So there's never an in-person hearing at the federal level.
I'm sure there could be, but in the cases I had, that never happened.
On the state level, is there always a hearing?
I believe there's always a hearing.
They don't say this is, just so obvious or one way or the other?
Well, certainly the governor has the power to do that, but I think the legislature has established this process, and one could criticize a governor for abusing the process, just as we criticize a governor for not using the process.
Well, we're going to get back to this subject in just a moment. We're talking about clemency, act of granting pardons, et cetera, that governors have and presidents have. We're talking about it with Attorney Steve Beckett here on Focus on WILL. A reminder, we are in the midst of our fall pledge drive, and your calls of financial support are welcome. The phone number is 217-244-9455. Or you can give online at willpledge.org. We're back on Focus on WILL, and I'm Jim Meadows, and my guest is Steve Beckett. He's an attorney in Urbana and a lecturer at the University of Illinois College of Law. Subject is the granting of clemency, pardons, and so forth by governor or president. And if you've ever been on the ever sought clemency, received clemency, know someone who has, or think someone ought to go through the process of doing so, give us a call with your questions and or your comments about your experiences. The phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, and we're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. This has been... there's been a lot of rulings on clemency in the last few years as Governor Quinn catches up on the backlog from the previous administration. If when a governor is keeping up with cases, how many do you expect to go through the state in a year?
It's really difficult to say. If there are thousands pending, and you want to be careful and give each one of them individual treatment, the amount of staff time to look at each case is pretty significant. And catching up plus having new applications made would seem to be a daunting task. And, of course, you want to be careful because there's criticism, of course, that can flow from any decision that you make. Yes or no.
So there's, in some ways, from a political point of view, there's a plus side to doing nothing on requests for clemency.
Sure, because it's hard to say that you would be criticized for doing nothing when you would be criticized for granting a pardon, or you would be criticized for denying a pardon or denying relief. The example that occurs to me is a presidential one is Scooter Libby. So here you have Scooter Libby, very controversial, highly publicized obstruction of justice case conviction in Washington, D.C. and district court there, actually sentenced to imprisonment. So now here's President Bush, who has a pardon application. What does he do? Now, the case is really on appeal, and Libby is about ready to go to jail. So what does he do? If he grants a pardon, look at the criticism. We go all the way back to President Nixon and President Ford and the grant of a pardon when a criminal charge hasn't even been filed. How incredibly rare was that, And so here we have this, who's a close aide of Vice President Cheney. And so if relief is granted, look at the criticism, look at the political fallback that is going to happen to President Bush. On the other hand, if he doesn't grant relief, what about from his own party, people within his own party or with his own government, because the argument was that Scooter Libby was, you know, really took a fall for the team. That pretty much would be the argument. And so instead of granting a pardon, he used his clemency power to commute his sentence so that he didn't have to do any time in prison.
The conviction is still on his record.
That's correct.
There's not a pardon there. There's not an expungement. Scooter Libby is still convicted of those charges, but he did not have to serve any time. But the appeals process was still going on at the time that his sentence was commuted. Is that unusual?
Oh, very unusual. Very unusual. You would expect that the executive is going to say, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to look at what the courts are going to do with this case, because obviously that's why we have the courts. And the kind of relief that is being sought from me is available within the courts. Why not let that happen? Look at the criticism, because now the executive is stepping into the courts and making a decision that the courts could make.
Now, in the case of Richard Nixon and President Ford's pardon of Richard Nixon, when no charges had been filed at all, I assume that was unprecedented.
I've never heard of it before nor since.
But the argument that I remember was not really for Richard Nixon's sake, but for the nation's sake, to save the nation from just the divisiveness that a prosecution of a former president would place upon the nation.
True, but I suppose the same logic could have applied to the trials of John Ehrlichman or Bob Haldeman or John Mitchell. Those trials went ahead. Those men were convicted, and so.
But they weren't. They weren't the chief executive.
No, they weren't.
But
we still had to live with the aftermath of Watergate and the whole mess that we probably would have had if President Nixon had been prosecuted.
Another unusual pardoning that comes to mind is here in Illinois, and that involved then Governor George Ryan and the. Essentially, the pardoning or the commutation, I guess, is the correct term.
Right. I think he did both. I think there were some pardons, and there were some. His blanket commutation was to rid us of the death penalty, but I think he actually exonerated some people and gave what today we would call our certificates of innocence.
Yes. I think he did that for four people who were pardoned pretty much entirely. Now, in this case, there may have been requests for clemency, but I don't think, at least in some of the cases, but I don't think Governor Ryan was acting on that as such. He had been looking at the issue of capital punishment, and I think there must have been some hearings of some sort.
He had, I think, many meetings with the review board, and I think they did hear applications on specific cases. But I think he granted relief for cases where there were no applications pending. I think with a broad stroke, he said everyone on death row, there is no death row. I'm commuting all those sentences.
He just did not want to see anybody on death row. And in some ways, that goes almost beyond individual cases. He's saying that, at least while I'm governor, no one's being convicted.
No one's being executed,
but in a sense, if all their sentences are commuted, no one's being sentenced to death either.
Well, that's correct, but the process of charging and obtaining death sentence continued after Ryan took that act of commuting all those sentences all the way through the legislative abolition of the death penalty, two, 3 years ago.
And I'm wondering about that, the influence of George Ryan's act of commutation, and certainly George Ryan is in pretty much disrepute now, just recently released from prison for corruption dating back to the Secretary of State's office. But would it be accurate to say that those commutations in 2003 led to the law abolishing the death penalty, you know, several years later?
I think it certainly was a factor. I think there was an unusual coalition of strong death penalty opponents for the principle that the death penalty is just wrong. It's it's morally wrong, and the government should not be taking life. And another aspect of how much is this costing us, that we have people in our government that are going, my gosh, look at the money that we are spending on these death penalty cases for lawyers, for expert witnesses. The cases seem to go on and on and on. The number of people who are actually executed seems to be very few. We've had all these people on death row, and it turns out 13 of them actually are innocent. You can sort of see that the cost effectiveness of the process is troublesome. And so that coalition of people who just plain thought it was wrong and people who thought it cost too much money, that coalition, I think, eventually won the day.
Okay. I'm wondering now, in a way, that was really a special form of granting clemency. It wasn't done for some of the broad reasons that broad categories of reasons that you've mentioned.
I think that the death penalty was an unusual circumstance about a specific aspect of the justice system.
Okay. We have a caller on line one, Paul in Champaign County. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Yeah. I had a couple of questions, but you kind of covered them in the earlier half hour. But on this subject, I remember the dramatic speech that Ryan gave out on the East Coast to, I guess it was a law assembly of some kind. And his speech was much wider than just opposition to the death penalty. It was he was talking about all sorts of malfeasance. And in Cook County, we have the Burge revelations where people were, tortured into confessing. And
that was John Burge, the former Chicago police officer,
right,
who was found guilty in that
case.
Who
was not adjudicated except for perjury. The statute of limitations ran out on most of the atrocious things that he sponsored.
Right. I agree with you. I think the governor then governor talked about what he was calling a machinery of death or a machinery within the system that he just thought was broken. And he exemplified it as an example with that kind of case. But again, it was a unique subject. You wouldn't see a movement to commute all of the burglary convictions or all of the sentences of imprisonment for sexual assaults, etc. It was capital punishment was the unique topic, I'd say.
Well, because that's irreversible. Obviously, 10 years in prison, like some of these guys spent, some of them on death row, I think, you can't really compensate for that, but death is irreversible, so that's the only thing. But he, complained about jailhouse informants, people,
right,
and that, all sorts of broad range of malfeasance that one sees. In the idea, maybe you could talk, one of the things I was thinking about, and you sort of covered it in the text, but the idea of what a commutation of those to a pardon. And there's also a large category, since we have so many elderly in prison, of humanitarian release for people who are in death, terminally ill and that sort of thing. And these elderly people that have been held. We have this example of this Black Panther 3 in Angola who got out and died a day after he was released. That wasn't a clemency release. He actually, the judge overturned the... And they demanded a retrial if they were going to file it, but and they did actually within an hour. But I don't know. There's a broader thing about the assessment of the individuals and how that can be done. As far as have they reformed, et cetera, et cetera. And it strikes me as another topic for a discussion that maybe another time you can be on, and which is this idea of the Kalmanoff proposal that the county here and the jail use what's called pretrial services, but it's basically an interview of intent and the threat that a person has to jump bail or be a threat to themselves or anyone else. This assessment that is actually done. In fact, it was a Virginia document, a short form of this sort of questionnaire to systematize the idea of deciding whether, this person really needs to go to jail for what particular offense he's committed. It's a digression, I granted, but it sort of captures the idea of how does one decide about these people. And you did mention that Obama's been very, very miserly in giving out these things. And I think he's worried about, like, the Willie Harton effect, where if he does pardon someone, and the case that you mentioned of is a business kind of fraud kind of thing, so it's not something where really these people are expected to be dangerous. But anyway, thanks for letting me have my say. I appreciate
okay,
it.
Paul, thank you for calling. That almost sounds like in the case of the Kamenoff matter, he was a consultant working on jail
sure.
issues with Champaign County. It's almost like pretrial clemency in some cases.
Well, I think the idea is to see if there are people who are charged with crimes who will not be going to jail eventually anyway. Why should they be in jail pretrial? Can we make a measurement? Or are there a set of circumstances that will allow us to say with some confidence that they don't present a danger to the public or a danger that they will flee while their case is pending? And other jurisdictions, I remember having a case out in Arizona where there were pretrial services, which was literally almost a form of probation where you had an assigned officer and you had to report, or they had GPS systems.
I'm wondering another category of clemency, and that is clemency in essence for a deal. I'm thinking of a lot of war movies, which seem to be on these grounds of the story of, well, we'll let you off whatever military crime you were convicted of if you go on this dangerous mission. But in real,
like the Dirty Dozen.
Dirty Dozen.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's the one. But I am reading that in early 1900s, some tuberculosis treatments were tested on prison inmates in exchange for clemency. Is this
wow?
Is this something that's really rare?
I would say that penology is gone. That's
they wouldn't
penological.
Do that,
we wouldn't do that now. We wouldn't do
that. Would
that
just be considered?
You know, and we used to have. I heard when I was a young lawyer, the older lawyers talking about the young adults being charged with a crime. But if you join the service, the charges would be dismissed.
That's
not something that I've seen in the 40 years I've been practicing.
I met a guy who said he was essentially told that probably the best thing for him to do was to join the armed forces, and that's how he got in the Navy. And he seemed to think it was a good deal in retrospect.
Yeah. But when I was a kid, the police would tell us to go home, and thank goodness that it was me who stopped you. You're going to be in more trouble with your parents than you are with me, because I don't think that happens much anymore either.
That's sort of on the street clemency,
right,
so to speak.
Right.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Still time for your questions about granting clemency with attorney Steve Beckett of Beckett and Weber and the University of Illinois College of Law. If you've ever been in a case, or if you know someone who is, where clemency would be the thing to seek, or if you've been through the process yourself, please call us at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL, toll-free number, or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu.
One of the things that the caller mentioned, the issue that he raised, was compensation. And we need to be clear that just because you receive clemency, that doesn't mean that your conviction was wrongful or that you're entitled to any compensation whatsoever. There's a separate process involving getting what's called a certificate of innocence if, in fact, you were pardoned and you were entitled to compensation, let's say, for years of imprisonment. I believe in Illinois it's $20,000 a year for wrongful imprisonment, compensation for wrongful imprisonment. But that would be separate and apart from this process that we're talking about.
There is a process for doing that.
There is a process. You can apply to court for a certificate of innocence. You can get a certificate of innocence from, or a finding of innocence from, the governor as part of this process, and that would entitle you to compensation.
Are there people, just in your view of society, are there people who should be applying for clemency, who really would be candidates for clemency and just haven't picked up the opportunity?
Yes, I think so. I think that there are people who have something that happened to them when they were young. It's an embarrassing aspect of their life. Filing the application for clemency is going to acknowledge something that that happened long ago and that people may not even be aware of. And so even filing the application is publicizing something that wouldn't ordinarily be known. They're embarrassed by it, and they just don't want to do it. Or second, that what they really think is, I don't have a chance, and because the odds are against me, I shouldn't do it. But again, I say the philosophy is you can't be told yes if you don't ask the question.
How much is it going to cost you to apply if you, say, use an attorney?
Oh, using an attorney? It's probably pricey. It's probably $2,000 to $5,000.
But are people granted clemency just for just doing it themselves?
Oh, sure.
Okay. We have a call in on line 4. This is Cindy from Champaign. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm calling about, actually, I was listening about the tuberculosis research that was done on prisoners. And right now there's a process in place that governs pretty much any sort of legitimate research on human subjects. Has to go through an institutional review board, or IRB, and there's actually special protections for prisoners when it comes to research.
Okay, so is there testing done on people in some form with, I guess there is with some medications, but in the case of prisoners, their rights are protected?
Their rights are protected, and as I mentioned, the review board, it does have a series of things that you must do anytime you're using human subjects. And we consider, for instance, pregnant women, fetus, children, and prisoners, they have special protections because they could easily be in a position to be coerced into the research. It doesn't mean that someone can't do research using prisoners. It's just that there are very special protections to make sure that it is not in any way perceived or used as trade for time off or getting released early or pardoned or anything like that.
So something like that case with the tuberculosis medicines on prisoners decades ago, that could not happen now?
Well, it would have to get past the IRB, the review board, and it's very unlikely that something like that would ever be acceptable, unless the prisoners would be subject to no more risk than the general public, and they would not be enticed to participate in trade for any time off for that participation.
Okay. Well, Cindy, thank you very much for calling.
Sure. Thank you. Bye.
And let me go to another call. This is line 1. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Yes, hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Yes, hello. Just a quick question, actually a statement as well. I was convicted of a felony almost 20 years ago, actually a little bit over 20 years ago. And because of that felony, it has completely destroyed my life. I mean, I had to really work hard to stay out of jail. And my question is, I was wrongly convicted of it, and I'm wondering how could I get this off of my record since now that enough time has passed, I'm hoping.
Well, one way to do it would be this process that we've been talking about where you apply for clemency through a process with the Prison Review Board. And if successful, you can have both a pardon and the potential of an expungement.
That's what I was wondering.
Because there is no – Illinois, there are other states that have expungement laws, even from felonies, where let's say after 10 years, if you were convicted of a certain class of felony, that you could petition and be granted relief to have that felony taken off your record. We don't have that in Illinois. The only process that we have is the one that we're talking about this morning.
So I just would simply try to fill out the forms for it?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Good luck to you. And that's an interesting question. Clemency is not really a place where you can necessarily prove a case of wrongful conviction, is it?
Well, you can, you can attempt to do so.
It's been done.
It's been done.
Yes.
It has been done. And, you know, you indicated, as I recall, Governor Ryan, there were at least four cases where he was satisfied that the people were wrongly convicted and he pardoned them and permitted expungement.
Well, in terms of the way that a conviction on your record can hurt you in your life, can a simple pardon help? Knowing it's not expungement, it's not going all the way.
Yes, it helps because the question on any application, have you been convicted of a crime, is yes, but. And the but is I've been pardoned. And here's my certificate, my pardon certificate.
Okay, and the pardoning for whatever reason, which might be after years have passed, the fact that you've turned your life around.
That's correct.
Are being able to point out some flaws in the process, whether or not it's a full expungement. Are there cases of pardons simply because of that benefit of the doubt sort of thing?
Sure.
Okay. Well, that's where we're going to have to leave the issue. Obviously, this is a real question for some people about whether you or a loved one should seek clemency. It's a real thing that people do. It's not just something in the movies or on the news. And I hope we were able to answer people's questions about the clemency process. And Steve Beckett, I want to thank you for answering those questions.
Thank you for having me.
Steve Beckett is an attorney with Beckett and Weber in Urbana and a lecturer at the University of Illinois College of Law. Welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. Today's show produced by Lindsay Moon, Jason Croft, our technical director, Sari Lesk, our intern, helping with production and research. Our thanks to Sean Powers in the newsroom for additional production assistance. Tomorrow, another program on politics featuring an update from Amanda Vinicky of Illinois Public Media and Tom Kasich of the News Gazette. We'll also talk with the new Illinois House Minority Leader, Jim Durkin. That's tomorrow on Focus here on WILL.